Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Salman Khan is one of the most influential teachers in the country. His short 12-minute video lectures are watched more than a million times a month. Yet Khan doesn't have a teaching degree or a classroom. What he has is a wildly popular, simple online method of teaching the basics of math, physics, biology, history, and a dozen other subjects. He calls it the Khan Academy, and it is turning classroom thinking upside down. This hour on Point, Salman Khan, online instruction and the future of education. You can join the conversation. Is that you out there watching, learning from Salman Khan? Has he become your online teacher, tutor, your child's? Is this the education fix we've been looking for? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we'll talk with Peter Norvig, who co-teaches a free online course on artificial intelligence at Stanford University, which has already signed up 58,000 students for its delivery this fall. But first to Salman Khan. He is making big waves in the world of education with some pretty simple, at least on the surface, video online. He got to start making videos about math and science, did a lot of them with a $25 headset microphone and a little setup in a closet, just churning them out. Here's a video from last year where he explains something pretty simple compared to some of his work, how to calculate the square root of 100.
100 is the same thing as 10 times 10. And then you know the square root of something times itself, that's just going to be that something. This is just equal to 10. So the square root of 100 is 10. Or another way you could write, I guess, the same truth is that 10 squared, which is equal to 10 times 10, is equal to 100.
Sounds simple? Maybe so. If you can figure it out, if it works for you, it's great. These videos have been watched at this point more than 70 million times. Joining me now is Salman Khan. He's the 34-year-old founder of the Khan Academy. He has 3 degrees from MIT in electrical engineering and computer science and a master's in business administration from Harvard. He was working as a hedge fund analyst when his young cousin needed help with her math homework. His tutorials for her went up on YouTube and became so popular that he quit his job in 2009 to run the Khan Academy full-time. Salman Khan, welcome to On Point.
Great to be here, Tom.
You're really shaking it up out there. I mean, Wired, they call you a nerdy South Asian Seinfeld, South Asian American Seinfeld.
I assume the nerdy was an endearing form of nerdy.
Absolutely. The highest praise these days. Nerds are exactly what we need. You've got so many people tuning into you. I know you've told this story a million times, but tell us once more, what were you doing when your cousin called up for some help?
Yeah, she was actually visiting me in Boston from New Orleans, and she was in seventh grade, and I remember we were watching the fireworks over the Charles River, and she was doing all of these brain teasers that I was giving her to kill time, so I was really impressed, and I was telling her the next day that, you know, she should think about going to MIT when she applies to colleges, and her mom actually said, well, you know, thanks for saying that when Nadia was away, but she said, Nadia's actually having trouble with math. So I chatted with Nadia. She apparently had bombed a placement exam, and she had trouble getting units, you know, converting kilograms to grams and all the rest. And so I said, hey, Nadia, how about I tutor you remotely? So we started doing that as soon as her family went back to New Orleans. And that worked out. Then I started tutoring her brothers and a couple of other cousins and family friends. And then in 2006, so that all started in 2004. In 2006, I had a buddy, and I was just telling him about, you know, I'm having a lot of fun doing this kind of volunteer tutoring with my family, but I have trouble scaling now that I have a lot of family friends that I was tutoring after work. And he's like, well, why don't you put some of your lectures on YouTube? And I said, no, that's for dogs on skateboards. That's not for real math. But I I gave it a shot, and you know, I guess the rest is history.
History, in a way. Give us a visual picture of these lectures. This is not you standing up there in a cardigan like Mr. Rogers. In fact, we never see you. Wired magazine says, like the Wizard of Oz, Khan never steps from behind the curtain. It's just you, your voice, and scrawling equations on a kind of electronic whiteboard on whatever it may be.
Yeah, no, you know, after that first day when I was attempting to make videos, I literally looked around my closet and I had no video camera, had no real recording equipment to speak of. I did have a USB headset, and I did a few web searches, and there's this kind of software called screen capture software where it just captures what happens on your screen and turns it into a video and your voice. And I said, well, you know, that's probably good enough, because that's what I was doing with Nadia when we did our live sessions. We would get on a speakerphone, and then we would use Yahoo Doodle, which was this little shared notepad.
Mm-hmm.
And it not only did it seem to work, but it seemed to in some way be a little bit more intimate than someone standing at a whiteboard and kind of talking to a class. And so I tried it out, and you know, in those early days, I was just like, "Look, it's just for my cousins; they're not paying me. Who cares about the quality?"
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I did that, I just got a lot of feedback from both my cousins and random people on YouTube saying that they really liked that form factor, that it allowed them to focus on the content. They didn't have a distracting face. It felt personal. It felt like we were sitting next to each other at the kitchen table and staring at the same content.
That was with cousin Nadia in 2004, and then a few more cousins and relatives. We're just talking 6 or 7 years ago. Give us a sense of the scale of students around the world who are now interacting with these videos online with Khan Academy.
Yeah, we're now at about 2 million unique students a month. And as you'd mentioned, they've been watched 70 million times. And that number has grown the number of students watching it per month has grown tenfold in the past year. So it's kind of on this, it's a surreal growth trajectory.
And it's not just the square root of 100. I was checking out your little mini video lecture on Taylor's polynomial this morning. I mean, you're taking it in all kinds of directions, and it's not even just math anymore, Salman Khan.
Yeah, you know what? When I started this off, I was making videos roughly in kind of the pre-algebra algebra area mainly for my cousins. But the one thing that started to dawn on me is once I had maybe 100 or 200 videos from my cousins is, you know that's a pretty good scaffold of algebra. And I said, well, I wonder if I could do trigonometry. So another 100 videos later, I was like, hey, you know, that's a pretty good scaffold. You can always do more. But that kind of gets a good job done for a lot of people. Then I said, let me try to do calculus. Let me try to do physics. Let me try to do chemistry. Let me try to do organic chemistry. So part of the fun of this has just been seeing what we can do. And the really neat idea here, and it seems obvious now in hindsight, is that most of these subjects do not change in a dramatic way from year to year. And so mm-hmm. once you make a decent collection of algebra videos, they're kind of good forever. I still redo videos just to make them nicer or to touch on a point in a different way. But for the most part, they're kind of evergreen content.
You've got 2,000 or 3,000 of these mini lectures up now, these tutorials. Give us the range of subjects that you're in at this point.
Yeah, there's literally a video on basic addition, and the mindset there is to have so everyone can feel like they have a starting point on that site. And mm-hmm. literally, the videos go incrementally from basic addition through vector calculus and differential equations and college level chemistry, biology, and physics. There's a little bit on art history, American history. It's a pretty broad set of content. A lot of on finance and economics as well.
Now, and at this point, is this just a little nice free tutorial for people who happen to stumble on it, or are you orchestrating something that may be bigger, something different? Is this just Salman Khan's favor to the world, or is this a game changer for education?
Well, you know, we'll see what it can do in terms of being a game changer. But what we are as an organization is much more than me now. I quit my job in 2009. Last year, we got significant funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and from Google and other private donors.
$1.5 million from Bill Gates. I think something like $6 million in total has come your way now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we have a team of 14 people. I would say about 2/3 of those people are focused on the software side. Khan Academy now is the videos are there, and that's probably where most people's first experience happens. But what we're trying to do is turning into a full, for lack of a better word, virtual school where anyone can go there. They have the videos on demand, but they also have exercises. And the exercises start them at basic addition. There's these game mechanics around it. It keeps track of their progress, gives them feedback. If they have a teacher or a parent that can act as a coach, it'll give them data and analytics on it. And so the the idea is if you have nothing, if all you have is access to the site, you can get a pretty solid grounding in a lot of core concepts. And if you do have access to a teacher, this has the potential to really supercharge what happens in the classroom.
And it's all free. We'll talk about how it works for individuals, how it works in the classroom. Salman Khan is with us from Palo Alto, California, founder of Khan Academy. Salman Khan, we've got lots of listeners calling for you already. Chanel in Hampton, Virginia. Chanel, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Salman Khan.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
Hi, Mr. Khan.
Hi, Chanel.
What's up?
How are you? I love you. You're such a lifesaver. I love all your lectures. I mainly go to the organic chemistry lectures, and I'm a college student, and they're very informative. You're such a lifesaver. I'm getting all the methods in such a short number of time. Your video is about 9, 10, 12 minutes, and my lectures are about an hour and 45 minutes, like three times a week.
So what are you doing? Are you skipping your lectures and just taking Salman Khan's 10-minute pop?
You know, I could actually do that. I could actually do that because, you know, I could understand it much, much more. We usually use PowerPoint. It's just that when Khan does it, he uses a lot of colors. It's just something that he does. And it's so much easier to grasp. And even organic chemistry itself is not one of the easiest subjects.
Organic chemistry being
worked out. Oh, thank you. I'm flattered.
Right across the country in Hampton, Virginia. Chanel's on it with your 10-minute videos. Chanel, thanks for calling. We're going to learn a lot more in this hour. Salman Khan is with us, founder and executive director of the Khan Academy. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour with the rock star famous video math teacher and more, Salman Khan, founder of Khan Academy and one-man online education sensation. He has kids, millions of them, eating up math and physics, chemistry, and learning. Salman Khan found out he had one pretty well-placed fan about a year ago, July 2010, at the Aspen Ideas Festival. Here was Microsoft founder Bill Gates suddenly talking about a golden age for online learning and Khan Academy.
If you're motivated to learn, if you really, really, really want to learn, this is an amazing time for everyone, because if you have access to Wikipedia, if you have access to the latest information on the web, there's a website that I've just been using with my kids recently called Khan Academy, K-H-A-N, just one guy doing some unbelievable 15-minute tutorials. There's great college lectures out on academicearth.org. So if you're motivated, now you can go to the very best lectures.
There it is, Bill Gates talking about Khan Academy, spelling out your name, Salman Khan, K-H-A-N. How did you find out that suddenly Bill Gates had your work on his lips?
Yeah, it was someone in the audience, actually our first major donor, Ann Doerr, had sent me a text message while that was happening.
This is wife of John Doerr, huge venture capitalist in California.
Right, right. And, you know, I got that text message, and actually I was running a little summer camp for seventh graders at the time, and I had all of these seventh graders running around. I was doing this kind of public trading markets experiment with them, and I got this text saying, Bill Gates is talking about you in front of 2,000 people. And I my first reaction is that Ann just sent the text to the wrong person. she probably knows people who Bill Gates would talk about. That wouldn't be me.
And here you are with these lectures. What is it supposed to be? Is it a tutor, essentially, that you amount to online who supplements the teacher? Is it or for students who don't get it? Or is it an entire learning path in and of itself where students can just kind of latch on to your sequential lectures and run through all of math or you name it if they're ready to do that? How do you picture this being use? Because you're talking a mass scale here. I mean, you've got 2 million unique users a month now. You're talking maybe reaching tens, hundreds of billions of students around the world.
You know, at least for us, it's kind of an open question what it is. We're not 100% sure. I think to some degree, all of those use cases apply. There's definitely a lot of students like Chanel who are in a formal education system taking a class, and they use this as either a supplement or maybe in, you know, maybe this is where they're actually getting the information from, and they're really using the class as a way of showing that they know the information. We have use cases where it's being used with the classroom, where the teachers are actively using the videos as a way to give students kind of the first pass information, and then that allows, that frees up the teacher to kind of do higher order interactions with the student. We have adult learners who are learning calculus just for fun. So it's really an open question on what this can be.
We got all kinds of response here on Facebook. Denny Lee says, my 3.92 would not be possible without Khan. Marcy says, the way teaching ought to be, thanks to Salman Khan, my sixth grade son loves math. Now, you've got a school system, Los Altos in California, who's taken this on in some of their grade years in a pretty big way. And from what I'm reading, Salman, it has ended up kind of flipping the normal classroom routine in a lot of ways, that students would get their lecture on the subject from you at home, and then in the classroom essentially be doing their homework with the teacher there to help them out. Is that right?
To some degree, we kind of view that actually as a first-order thing that can happen. And that was happening independently of us. Probably 2 or 3 years into me making the video, I started getting letters from teachers saying that they were doing exactly that. They're saying, hey, why do I have to give the lecture? You already have that lecture. And the students can pause and repeat and watch it at their own pace and move ahead or back up and review things. What we're doing with Los Altos, I would say, is even a step deeper, where they're using the videos and they're using our software platform, where every student in these classrooms is working at their own pace. And whether they're at home or in the classroom, they might at that moment watch a video or they might do exercises. And it's all self-directed. And what happens when they go into the classroom is that the teacher gets a dashboard seeing where every student is. And it highlights the students who look like they really need help. And so the teacher, every moment of a teacher's time, instead of lecturing or grading papers or any of the rest, is spent doing direct one-on-one interactions or small group interactions with students, or even better, getting students to help each other. It's pretty amazing when you look at the classrooms. They're these super interactive experiences where these kids are walking around, helping each other, teaching each other, and the teacher is actually, you know, sitting next to students pretty much the entire class time.
And in many ways, going at their own pace, whether that means catching up to where they ought to be, grade level, or in some cases going far, far beyond. I'm curious how classrooms and teachers handle that. Salman Khan, stand by if you would in Palo Alto for a minute. We have a teacher from the Los Altos, California school system with us. Courtney Cadwell joins us now from Los Altos. Courtney Cadwell, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You teach 7th grade remedial math, I think, there in Los Altos in junior high?
Yes, that's the class that we piloted the Khan Academy with last year.
And you've been teaching for 17 years. Today's the first day of school there in Los Altos. Welcome back to work.
It is. Thank you.
How are you using Salman Khan's videos with your classes? What's it look like, Courtney?
Every day looks differently in my classroom. I like to try new things. I keep calling my students my guinea pigs, and I'm trying to differentiate instruction for them and do what's best based on their needs. And so sometimes we'll do the videos for homework or the practice modules for homework. Sometimes we'll integrate them into class time. I'll do a lot of stations where students maybe watch a video or work on the online modules for a little bit, and then they'll do some group problem solving or project-based learning activities, and then I'll have time to sit with them, look at the Khan Academy data, and really target my intervention strategies and my instruction based on the data I'm receiving from their practice modules.
So it's not just these lectures, it's exercises at this point. Lots and lots and lots of problems that your students can do, and you see on this kind of dashboard how they're doing with those problems essentially as they do them, Courtney.
Exactly. I get the data in real time, so I know exactly who's struggling, at what time, with what they're struggling. I can go look in and see the types of problems, where they're missing it, how much time they're spending, those types of things. So I can really go to that child and tell him or her, you know, hey, let's work on this together. Let's figure this out. And so instead of guessing, it takes a lot of the guesswork out for a teacher. I can really go in there and figure out who I need to meet with, what we need to talk about, how I can get them back on the right track.
Now, a lot of your students have not been real keen on math historically, right? They come into this with a, they're with you because math was not their favorite subject. How's this working?
It It's been amazing. I've just seen a great attitude adjustment in my students. They love coming to math class now. The online modules, the way they have the modules set up, it's like a kind of like a game, and they earn points and they earn badges, and the kids are very motivated to work these problems. I could never get them to work this many problems on their own, and they want to do this, and they look forward to it, and it's just changed their entire impression of math. They've also started to take ownership of their learning, because as they're moving at their own pace, they can get hints, and they can watch one of Sal's videos and get a lot of help there. And in the past, they've been very passive learners, just waiting for the teacher to instruct them and tell them what to do. And now they're becoming active learners and taking more responsibility with their education and really going for it and trying new things. And they know where to go to get help now. It's been a great change in them as learners.
And you're speaking as a pretty experienced teacher. You say they earn badges. This is sort of video game style where you get, you know, little images and icons that to mark your success as you go through these exercises.
Exactly, and the badges aren't just for getting things right. It's for perseverance and trying and not giving up and things like that. So even, you know, struggling students are continually earning these badges, and they're motivated to move forward and not to give up.
This helps in your classroom. Does it also blow up the traditional classroom? I mean, I'm reading here about some students, you know, using this in fifth grade, and they're racing ahead to sort of, high school or college-level trigonometry. What happens when the classroom sort of can follow, you know, the threads wherever they go here at their own speed, and they're all over the map?
Well, I think it does blow up the traditional classroom, and I think that's very exciting. It's a very active class. The kids are going at their own pace. The teacher, you know, kind of has to have a good working knowledge of math, so you can intervene at multiple levels at any one time. You never really know what the day is going to look like when you're using the Khan Academy in your classroom. But the kids are motivated. They're moving ahead. They're doing well. We're getting great feedback from the Khan Academy, but also from our other testing situations as well. So it's a very positive thing, and I think it's stretching us as educators, starting to think about how we do math education in our classrooms, what those classrooms will look like, and I think the Khan Academy is a step in the right direction, and it's a good bridge between, you know, the past and the future of education with this online platform.
There's an awful lot of online material and digital material available today. You know, why this one? I know they came to Los Altos, and so your whole school system is involved in it, but is it because it's free, not a small thing? Is it somehow because of, I mean, Salman Khan does most of these himself, and he's got this kind of, forgive me, Salman, but it's a little bit doofusy, or it's real casual sort of presentation. It's not polished up. Is it because it's free, Courtney? Is it because you've got Salman just kind of laying it out there? What is it?
I think it's definitely a little bit of both. Free is very nice for our school district in this financial climate. And then having, you know, the access to Salman and his crew over there at the Khan Academy is very helpful as well. But it's, you know, it's very simple. It's very engaging. His videos are straightforward. They're very conversational. You can sit down and learn something just in a short period of time and really get a good handle on it. The online modules are very engaging for the kids. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I think in Los Altos, you know, different teachers use a lot of different things, and we're really trying to create blended learning environments in our classrooms. And Khan Academy is one of those tools, and it's a tool that I've really enjoyed using this past year and look forward to using more. And I think the other teachers in the district will buy into it as well. But definitely the free part, and then and Sal's a very good teacher online. And so that definitely boosts his credibility with us.
Courtney Cadwell, it's great to have you with us on this first day of school in Los Altos, California. And thank you very much for your time and thoughts.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Salman, stand by for just a second. I want to get you back in here, but we've got a lot of listeners. Jock in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air with Salman Khan, Jock.
Okay, thanks. Hello.
Hi.
I have only some comments and no questions. First, I took organic chemistry in college and continue to have an interest in physics, particularly quantum mechanics, strong and weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and other obtuse subjects. I read Scientific American to try to follow these topics, but I do that with difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year ago, I found Khan's lectures on these deep, dark, mysterious subjects, and his lectures made everything clear to me. And he beats the heck out of Scientific American. And That's all I had to say.
That's an endorsement right there, Jock. And let me get one more. Rainer in Nashville. Rainer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I'd just like to say I'm a senior in college, and I've always had an interest in science and math, but around eighth grade, kind of missed a couple of key lessons in probably pre-calculus, and so it made it really difficult for me to keep following along in algebra. But this past year, I decided, you know, I'm kind of cocky. Hey, you know, why am I so bad in math now? It's not, can't be my intellect. And I went on and found the Khan Academy and started taking the videos. But my question actually has to do with user interaction on the Khan Academy website.
Okay.
I was wondering if this is a question for Sal, if they plan on developing any more in that arena.
Do you mean
I'm kind
like
of a sucker for the trivial points that you get when you sort of complete challenges and watch videos, but I was wondering if they planned on developing that more, and really what I had in mind was sort of challenging other users to competitions or to math-offs or mini-math competitions.
So sort of community or social use of the site, Rainer.
Right.
Salman yeah. Khan, how about it?
Yeah, no, that's on our pipeline. It's something we want to do very seriously. You know, right now we have 2 million students, and they're kind of each individually working on their own, unless they have a coach or a teacher to work with. And we think it could be fun to have some of these challenges and have a little bit of a competitive framework in place, and a little bit of a kind of multiplayer gaming framework. And we're just going to try to balance it, so we don't want it to turn into an overly competitive environment. But no, completely agree, and we think that definitely speaks to something that I would also enjoy participating.
Rainer,
expect to see some of that in the next 6 months.
Thanks for your call from Nashville, Rainer. So you're on the record here talking about not just 2 million students, but 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 million students. It's free now, and you've got a lot of kind of foundation supporting here, Bill Gates and Google and others. Does it stay free, or are you building a gigantic business here?
Yeah, so the simple answer is yes, it'll stay free. It's this was set up as a not-for-profit. Not that not-for-profits can't charge. Obviously, most mm-hmm. universities are not-for-profits, and they're very good at charging for things. But the reason why, honestly, why I wanted to make it for not-for-profit is so that I or the rest of the organization is always focused on that mission, and which is educating a world-class education for anyone, anywhere for free. And so that is core to what we're doing. We it's possible that, I mean, with that said, we need to sustain ourselves somehow. And so we are looking for ways to do it. I hope that foundations continue to believe that this is probably the most scalable way to educate people and have a high social return on investment. But at the same time, there's other possibilities. You know, corporations have come up to us and said, hey, can we use this for our corporate training? Maybe there's a way to sustain ourselves. Maybe, who knows? It's kind of an open question still. But core to our mission is keeping our content that people get at KhanAcademy.org completely free.
It's obvious that you have a knack for this. A lot of people, millions, responding to it. What are the implications of that? Courtney, we didn't get to this, but she used your stuff in Africa, in Kenya last summer. I mean, are we going to have one math teacher in America, one math teacher in the world who happens to be good at getting the concepts across? What are the implications of that?
What I suspect is you'll have a handful of lecturers who make these type of videos. It won't just be me. In fact, we're already starting to talk to some other groups about making other videos, and especially in topics that I'm not competent to give lectures mm-hmm. in, but what I think it does is it doesn't replace teachers. It actually lets them go up the value chain. I mean, you heard Courtney talk about how it's changed what happens in the classroom. She can now intervene. She's actually using the fact that she's a human in a human way. She's not doing things like giving the same lecture every year or every class period. And so what I hope happens is that what you see in classrooms is no longer lecture. What you see in classrooms is no longer kids sitting passively. What you start seeing in classrooms around the world is kids starting to interact with each other, kids doing more projects, kids doing a lot of the higher order types of things that most teachers, I think, dream about. And before, they never had the time to do it or a way to address it or a way to cater to every student in a meaningful way.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Salman Khan, founder of Khan Academy, and one man, kind of education sensation these days. His, what, now thousands of online videos on math and chemistry and now beyond, Napoleonic Wars, history, you name it, has kids, millions of them, eating up math and chemistry and learning online, is being taken into classrooms as a supplement to the teacher, sometimes turning classrooms upside down. Joins us today from Palo Alto, California. Maxine in Lancaster, Kentucky, you're on the air with Salman Khan.
Yes, I am an elementary teacher. I have a tutoring service now that I tutor kids that my heart goes out to those who are falling between the floor planks of the public schools. One of my very frustrations from when I was doing my student teaching was learning that it was all about the paperwork, which was back when. But I see today such a necessary change in how our we as teachers are performing in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And what really excited me about listening to your program and the Khan Academy is how it touches so many different elements that are frustrating to the teachers in the classroom, where there's getting to be more paperwork of tracking kids rather than teaching kids, which takes our time away from teaching and knowing what our students are really doing. And so this provides documenting of what they are doing. It also really addresses the fact that every child is an individual learner, and they really need to learn at their own pace, their own maturity level, and how income is coming in. So in tutoring, I have a picture of when I'm talking to the kids and their parents, of helping them understand how important it is in the elementary level that if they're sick one day and they miss that learning lesson in math that day, how much it affects the whole foundation of building a house on math.
Yeah. Miss one piece and you're in trouble. Here you can go back and get it. Do you think this will put you out of business with your tutoring service, Maxine?
No, I would totally use it. And the reason I don't think we're going to lose our teachers, because we still need in our humanity is that real person there to help the students say, yes, it's wonderful with, and I have not looked at your program, but I know that just to have the awards, and I love it, that it is not that you got the correct answer, it's the fact that you keep on persevering. When I was in college, I had a science class. It was on ecology, and it was one of the questions, and we were on the computer, and the first time I did it, I got the answer wrong, and it says, try again, and the computer did, because the teacher had programmed that into it, because it was, like, real daunting to me, because I'm not science person. But then the next time, you know, I did it again and I got it wrong, and he says, try one more time for dear old mom. And it just stuck with me my whole life going, yeah, you just keep working at something. So
that little bit to get you over the hump. Maxine, I appreciate your call very much there.
I think we might incorporate the dear old mom idea.
one more time for dear old mom. You know, there have been so many people working on this digital future for education, Salman. You know that. My friend Art Bartage with Enable Learning in Cambridge, Massachusetts, doing great work on this. A big admirer of what you're doing. Says your format's perfect, your timing is perfect. But his question to you, and it's kind of implicit. You get a call there from Kentucky or you know, not all schools have all this technology in them. In big urban areas, in rural areas, not everybody's figured out how to use technology in the classroom yet. I mean, how do you envision the future of technology in the classroom? What does it look like? What's your vision?
Yeah, no, it's a very legitimate point. I think what's happened, this is since I was a kid in the 80s, you know, we had computer labs then, and even then they were completely unutilized because no one really knew what to do with them. We'd go in for like 20 minutes and they'd say, hey, put a diskette in, and okay, you've booted it, now go back to math class or
right,
something like that.
Right.
And so what we think is now we are giving a very tangible thing to do with the technology, and it's not technology for technology's sake. It's about technology to enable humanity and the rest of the curriculum. And so what we think is that now this exists, there's actually now a reason to do it, and it's actually not – not expensive when you compare it with other things. Right now you can get a kind of a handheld PC for $200 that can last 4 years. That's $50 a year. And you don't have to, and it could be shared by multiple students. So it actually goes down to, only $10 or $20 per student per year, which is super cost effective even compared to textbooks and especially the $8,000 to $10,000 a year that a lot of public school systems might spend on per pupil.
Well, take it from there, though. Let's say, Bill Gates gives you, $50 or $100 billion. You've got all the money in the world to work on this, and there's the American education system. Let's say you can get your technology in everywhere. What does the actual education look like in a fully technology-empowered American education system? What's it look like?
I think what you'll see in this, we want to see more and more of this, is the school of the future is going to be, it's kind of going to revert back to the one-room schoolhouse, where you have kids of all ages at all different skill levels. They might not even be kids, even college students. They're all in that one room, and they're all learning at their own pace. It frees up time for them to do things that are actual expressions of their creativity. So actually writing computer programs, building robots, composing music, whatever it is, there's time freed up to do that, and that they have mentors and teachers that are constantly walking around and mentoring them in these projects and getting them past the hurdles the way that Courtney's doing in her class. And I want to point out, this is the interesting thing, is that there's no reason why it's just the U.S. It's really a worldwide phenomenon here. We're actually right now translating the content into 10 languages, and the idea is that we also want to eventually localize the software so that a student anywhere can start to get a pretty good scaffold. And as important as the self-paced learning is in the U.S., and it's super important here, it's even more important for a kid in India who has to work half the day or who had, who's never learned to read or has been out of school for 5 or 6 years.
Tech-powered, self-paced, is that a systemic change that could fix our problems? You've heard the news out today, the new ACT scores for college admissions showing that just 1 in 4 American graduates in the class of 2011 who took the exam met their 4 key benchmarks. Can you put self-pacing and this kind of, series of tech lectures, technology in the classroom and fix that? Or does it take something else, something more?
It's an open question. We'll find out. The unfortunate thing is right now, based on things like ACT scores or some of these state exams to graduate, a lot of students, if you just look at the stats of how many students have to take remedial math or college algebra when they get to college, if they even get there, it's a huge number. It's a majority. It makes you think, what has happened in there to them over the course of the last 7-8 years in high school and in middle school? And the answer isn't it's actually not a problem with the teachers. It's not a problem with the students. It's exactly what the teacher from Kentucky was pointing out, is that you miss one day of school when in third grade, or you don't learn how to your multiplication tables properly, or you don't 100% master negative numbers, that's going to be a gap in your foundation that's going to last with you your lifetime. And at some point, that gap is going to allow something to crumble when you get to algebra or calculus. And we're seeing that across the board. And so we hope that what we're doing here can really address that and allow people to go back and make sure they have 100% foundation so that they can stay on a track.
Wired Magazine says you never intended to become an education revolutionary. Are you an education revolutionary, Salman Khan?
We don't want to, the one thing we shy away from is trying to make more of it than what it is. We hope it can be as much as possible. But, our focus and our team, we generally just want to keep building stuff, seeing how it works, looking at the data, getting feedback from users and making it better and better and exploring where it can be used and really avoid getting into kind of the more political debates about it.
Well, I don't know if you're going to be able to avoid that in the world of education,
but
you're making a pretty good whack at it so far, and it's been great to have you with us today. Salman Khan, he's produced more than 2,400 videos on topics from math and chemistry to history. You can find a selection of those videos at our website, onpointradio.org. Founder and executive director of Khan Academy, Salman Khan in Palo Alto, thank you very much for being with us today. Great talking with you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
In a moment, a free online class in the basics of artificial intelligence. This is On Point. When Stanford University announced a free online class this fall in artificial intelligence, word got around. Now, more than 58,000 students from around the globe have signed up to take the class, taught by two leading experts from Silicon Valley. Students won't get credit, but they will be taught by two of Google's stars and leading AI experts, Sebastian Thrun and Stanford Peter Norvig. Joining me now from Mountain View, California, is Peter Norvig, Director of Research at Google, who is Stanford Research, Stanford Research Professor Sebastian Thrun is teaching Introduction of Artificial Intelligence at Stanford this fall. Peter Norvig, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
So what exactly is the course going to cover? What's the range here? Is it an introductory course in AI?
It's the introductory course in artificial intelligence, the standard course that's taught at Stanford, and it does require prerequisites in mathematics and programming, so it's not an introductory course for anyone, but for somebody who has that kind of background.
So how do you determine who has the prerequisite background to show up and take, if very remotely, your free online course?
Well, we've offered it for anybody to sign up, and we've made clear what the syllabus is, what we're going to cover, and tried to describe what's required, what background is required, and then it's up to the students to do the work. And we wanted to make the course such that it's as similar as we can make it to a live course taught on campus. There's lots of materials online. I've heard about Sal. I've talked with Sal before, and he's one of the inspirations for what we've done. But he has a approach where it's up to the student to do their work, or it's supplemental to a course. We wanted to see, can we provide the experience of a real course online with homeworks due every week? And so the students will quickly find out, can they do the homeworks or not? And we'll expect them to keep up.
So that raises a couple of questions, but the first one is just this 58,000, and maybe it's more than that by now. But this
we're just about at 85,000 now.
85,000. Did you have any expectation when you stepped up to offer this course, Peter Norvig, that you would attract that kind of audience?
No. So Sebastian and I thought about this. We thought we'd taught the course at Stanford before just for Stanford students, and we said we want to open it up. We want to do this experiment to see if we can reach more people in the world. And Sebastian said we could reach 10,000 people, and I thought he was exaggerating, but we'll definitely get a couple thousand. We had no idea that we were going to get this many. Now, so far, we only have their email addresses, so that's not a lot of work to ask out of them.
When
they start having to do the actual homeworks, we expect some of them will drop.
Interest from 175 countries around the world, 85,000 now signed up. What do you make of that? How do you interpret that, what seems like enormous amount of interest in people? As you say, you'll see what happens, but so far willing to put their hand up and say, I want to study artificial intelligence with you guys maybe thousands of miles away at Stanford University.
It's a tremendous response. I think it just shows that there's a lot of interest out there, that people want to have access to this type of material. They want to learn. They think this is an interesting topic, interesting set of teachers maybe, and Stanford's a well-known university. And bringing all those things together and making them available for free in a real course where you can be evaluated is just something that's a little bit novel. Lots of people have done similar types of approaches before, but we put all the pieces together in just a slightly different way.
When you talk about a small world, here you're out, presumably, as director of research at Google, former NASA scientist, you're out on the cutting edge of AI. You're going to be instructing people literally from around the world. I'm trying to take on board what this trend that you're a part of means about global understanding at the cutting edge of high science. Does this speed the creation of a real sort of homogeneous global community of scientific insight?
I hope so. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it easier for more people to get access to this type of information. So you don't have to get a PhD to study AI. You can try it out in a format that's easier and see if it makes sense for you.
And who is AI useful to? Do you have to be an engineer in a high-tech company for this to be useful? Or what's the range of profiles of people for whom you think this might be valuable?
I guess to apply all the techniques, it makes more sense to be in some type of a company. I think it's broader than just the computer industry. So you're seeing applications in biology and in finance, sort of across the board in any type of profession that's dealing with interpreting data, interpreting uncertainty. These techniques are useful.
And does Google, your director of research there, do they have any concern that you're giving away the store to the world?
No, so Google's been extremely supportive. You know, it's always been our mission to provide access to information, and this is just one more way to do it, and they're behind it 100%.
Okay, we've got a lot of listeners right now. What's a or the key insight that you hope people come away from a semester of AI with? Is there some fundamental orientation toward artificial intelligence or fundamental piece of understanding you hope people get?
I guess to try to demystify it, you know, so people have visions of robots from science fiction stories without quite understanding how they got there. So we want to show that by analyzing, using mathematical techniques, using programming techniques, that you could understand what it is that a robot can do or not do, understand how to interpret data in the world and make sense of it.
And will computers' intelligence outpace our own? Has it already when you add it all up?
I don't really think about it as outpacing. I think of it as augmenting. So there's already places where a computer outpaces us. My computer is much better at multiplying 10-digit numbers than I am. And there's places where people are better than computers. And so I think of how can we work together.
Peter Norvig, Director of Research at Google, guest lecturer at Stanford University. He'll be teaching with Sebastian Thrun, a free online course in artificial intelligence this fall. 85,000 people already signed up for that from right around the world. Peter Norvig in Mountain View, California. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.